Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Welcome to Listen to Older Voices and part two of a three-part program that features the life and time story of 70-year-old Simon Allsop. In part one, we learned that Simon was totally devoid of interest and ability in sport, except for sailing. His early school experiences were not terrific, and he was the victim of being bullied. He graduated with an engineering degree, but found himself working for the Ford Motor Company programming on very early computers using punch cards. This week, we learn about his objections to the Vietnam War and how he joined the Navy Reserves whilst at university and how this was sufficient to keep him out of Vietnam. The story of his experiences are both informative and entertaining. His views and opinions on the treatment of Indigenous Australians as well as migrants will find many sympathetic ears. Simon also speaks at some length of his amazing bus trip as a young man from Kathmandu through the Middle East and onto Europe. However, it is the story of his stroke and how he has and is coping which is most touching and informative. We pick up now with Simon talking about the Vietnam War and how he dealt with the possibility of being conscripted. Now, this is also the period when the Vietnam War had reared its ugly head. How did you deal with the ballot? Were you balloted in or out?
My cousins were balloted in the first ballot when they took a lot of people because they didn't know how many people they'd get.
Yes.
So I thought, I don't want to go to Vietnam. And I discovered that if I was in the Naval Reserve, I was out of the ballot. And a letter went up on the university notice board from the Navy saying they were looking for undergraduates to join the Naval Reserve. So I joined the Naval Reserve.
And with some, I mean, albeit on the bay, you did have some experience.
Well, only in
yachting.
Dinghies.
Yeah, but that's... There was, again, a sympathetic relationship.
The Navy knew we were doing engineering and we had a certain amount of work to do during the holidays, and they did put that on for us. Oh, so we went to Cerberus, a long time ago now, in Sydney. We went to Sydney and Queensland, where there were naval bases, and Nowra. And at Nowra, we went to sea in HMAS Yarra, which was a destroyer that bobbed and weaved, and at sea transferred via Jackstay, via rope, to HMAS Melbourne. And HMAS Melbourne was an aircraft carrier, rock solid, and the air was going up and down. And to keep the road tight, the sailors on the runway of HMAS Melbourne were running up and down to keep the rope that the midshipmen transferring tight.
Oh, wow.
And behind, if I had dropped in the water, I would have been run over by HMAS Supply, which was a big supply boat, which had sailing up between the two, Yarra and the Melbourne. But the trick for the sailors running up and down the runway was to get the feet off the midshipmen wet. And it was frightening.
Oh, bet.
I got onto the deck of Melbourne and forgot to salute and got told off.
I think you were probably just so pleased to get there.
It was an experience still.
But that would have been an experience being on the Melbourne, though.
It was,
because at that stage, that was one of our top...
It was our...
was it the flagship?
Flagship, yes.
Oh, yes.
And the Admiral was on board.
Oh, okay.
And so I got told to take a message up to the control room. I had no idea what to do. I'd only just arrived. We hadn't had any naval training. We were engineers from university.
Yes.
We didn't know much about naval tradition. So I got up there and saluted and handed this message on and left quickly.
I bet you did. Mind you, in retrospect now, wouldn't it have been nice to have been able to just have a good look around there? It must have been.
Well, I had a look as I went in, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So how long were you on the Melbourne for? Was it just a matter of days or was it?
It was a week.
A week?
Yes. Or so.
Yes.
I forget now. It was fun.
Fun. What I was going to ask you. Yes, I bet it was.
Yes.
And I bet you learnt a lot on there too.
Yes, I did.
So, okay, that got you out of Vietnam. It's interesting because,
my birthday wasn't balloted in.
It wasn't balloted in. No. Now, I've spoken over the last few years as the baby boomers move into the older generation at some length with most of them about their feelings on Vietnam. And I picked up from you, you said, thank goodness I wasn't balloted in. Was it safe to assume that you weren't comfortable with what was happening in Vietnam?
I was uncomfortable with Australia's presence, a bit like I'm uncomfortable with Australia bombing the Syrians. We've stopped that now, fortunately.
Yes.
That's not our war.
No, it's funny, isn't it, how there are some parallels there.
Mm.
Yes. The other thing a lot of people I've spoken to have been happy to talk about, there was a lot of disdain and a lot of bad things said to the young men that went over.
That happened at the time. That was terrible. They went because their government said, we need you to fight. The government was wrong, or might have been wrong, but they went.
Yes.
And they represented us. And yes. We booed them.
It was terrible. It was. Yes. It was just as bad when they came back, wasn't it?
Well, that's what happened when they came
back.
Yes. They got booed.
Yeah.
And nobody respected them.
I think a lot of people, myself included, one thing age brings is a perspective.
Mm.
And we look back now and go, not only was it wrong to have done that to them, but we now understand a little bit of what they went through.
Yes.
And
terrible.
Still suffering today.
With Agent Orange sprayed everywhere.
Yes. Is it fair to say then that you see very little value in what we might call wars?
Well, they stop other horrible things happening, but the cost is very high.
Mm. Do you have a feeling about where we are as a nation in that regard?
We're very lucky there's been no war in Australia. Well, there has been a war. We displaced the Aborigines. There was a war in central Victoria, for example.
Yes.
For a long time. But we just shot them.
Do you know, I wouldn't like to put a number on it, but in 14 years, I've probably spoken to some 500-600 people. You're the first person to actually identify that as an issue. You know, to say we actually have had a war.
We have, but we won it, you see.
Yes, but this shouldn't have been a war in the first place, though, should it?
Well, no, but we moved in and took the Aborigines land. There were one or two only Aborigines who could muster the rest of the quiet adults who weren't warlike.
No.
Unlike the American Indians.
And the Maoris.
And the Maoris, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And therefore, they got slaughtered. And when they retaliated, they were slaughtered even more.
We're jumping ahead, but I think it's appropriate, given where our conversation is. What's your position then at the moment on some sort of recognition of Indigenous Australians in a constitution? Do you think that should happen?
Yes, they should be. We should all be one people. In fact, I think the Australian flag should be changed. The Union Jack should be taken out of the corner. When the flag was invented, that was appropriate. It's no longer appropriate. The Aboriginal flag should be there, in the corner of our flag, with the same stars.
With the Southern Cross.
With the Southern Cross. Because Aboriginal Australia is relevant to us.
Why do you think so many people are resistant to changing the flag then?
Well, not many people want to recognise in that way the original inhabitants of Australia, but we should.
Yes.
We should respect them more.
Yes, it's not much to ask, is it?
It's like the Negroes in America were for years downtrodden, and the reason was they never got an education.
Yes.
When they got an education, they produced presidents.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Indeed. And there's a lot of good people hiding because they don't know what else to do.
Yes.
They haven't been given the opportunity to excel. We need to do that to all our inhabitants, Aborigines and, anybody else.
It's quite a mark on our social conscience as a nation that we still seem to measure people in terms of both the colour of their skin and their racial background, don't we, rather than what's inside the person.
Yes, but sometimes the people who have coloured skin band together and don't like the community they're in and cause havoc. which is what's happening in Melbourne at the moment.
Is it? I don't know the answer to this, but I'm wondering whether you do. Is it a case they band together and cause havoc because they want to do that, or is it because they feel isolated by the communists?
I don't know them, but I think they're isolated and nobody offers them a welcoming hand.
Because this country has a long history, doesn't it, of taking people in from...
Yes, we didn't offer the Italians a welcoming
hand. Or the Greeks.
Or the Greeks.
No.
But they were strong enough to look after themselves.
In fact, you know, we can go back through the Vietnamese, the Chinese. It just seems
in the gold rush. Yes.
In the gold rush, it just seems like every few decades we have an influx from another part.
And Australia
of the world.
Is so much stronger because of all the different cultures.
It is, isn't it?
It is.
It is.
I love having a cappuccino in the morning.
You got my vote on that one.
My mum and dad weren't able to do that. There were no coffee shops.
Oh no! Instant coffee was it, wasn't it? And that was terrible.
Yes,
it wasn't
it
even close.
Was.
It was.
Yes.
And the same with food, wasn't it? I mean. Back in the 50s and certainly even into the 60s, we just didn't have the variety of foods.
No, we happily have pizzas here. For example, when we don't feel like cooking.
Yeah.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Simon Allsop.
Back to Simon. And there are so many elements of Simon I'd like to talk to you about.
Okay.
But just very briefly, back to that job in the early programming, was it a job that you stayed at for a long time or did you move on to something else, the programming
one? Eventually I decided I wanted to travel.
Oh, okay.
And I bought a bus ticket from a bus from Kathmandu to London. So a company called Sundown, it's Overland Bus.
I remember Sundown.
It went through from Kathmandu through... India, northern India, the Sikh area, I've just forgotten the name. And it was fascinating to do that trip. And then went through Pakistan. So I've been through the Khyber Pass.
That must have been
very
desolate. Incredible experience
yes.
for that time. This was in the 1970s, was it?
Yes, late 60s.
Yeah, late 60s, yes.
And we got to Turkey. We went through Syria and the places you can't go to now.
No.
So I've seen that. I've been to Tehran. I've been to a wedding in Tehran. And I understand a little bit about what the culture's like. Not much. It's a long time ago now.
Yes.
And they are people who deserve our help, not bombs.
Look.
And they are committed against Israel. So we need to be careful about that. Through Turkey to Gallipoli, across the Bosphorus to Constantinople, and then up through what was then behind the Iron Curtain, through Bulgaria and Romania.
Whoa, okay.
Turn left, came out through Poland, went through the checkpoint Charlie the wrong way from the Iron Curtain.
You went from
out
to West Berlin.
The sight of a West Berlin stake overhanging the plate after the months in the communist regime was amazing.
I bet it was.
And we got to the UK 10 minutes early from our advertised time.
Wow, after all that journey.
After all that journey, yeah.
You can't get a bus to the city and do that.
So we got off the bus at Earl's Court and I found somewhere to live. A year and a half after the trip, I married one of the girls on the bus. By then I knew she was suitable for me. We'd swapped seats. We were asked to swap seats every day, so we sat next to everybody. And this girl had my own standards.
This is Brenda.
No.
No.
This is Christine.
Christine, okay.
Brenda's my second wife.
Okay, we'll come to Brenda a little later on.
So we decided that we would have our children in Australia, not in the UK.
Okay. Why was that? What made that decision? Why did you make that decision?
Well, it seemed that you could do more in Australia. It wasn't, the society wasn't as rigid.
Right.
And health was probably just as good in the UK, but it was harder to access.
Right.
We're Australian anyhow.
You're Australian anyhow, that's good. Look, if you don't mind, before we go with Christine back to Australia, I'd just like to go back a little bit on that journey, because that was quite an incredibly long journey, and it would have been an amazing journey.
Yeah, 80 days on a bus with 82 Australians, with 42 Australians.
Is it an unreasonable question to ask, was there one outstanding moment or event or place that you visited that really sticks out?
Yes, Bucephalus in Iran.
Go on.
Why is that? It was the original town where the Persian emperor lived.
Right.
And had all the Persian history to it. And the Persian almost defeated the Greeks.
Yes.
Darius. I'm trying to think of the name
of it. That's right, Darius.
Of the emperor. And the remains in Bucephalus were amazing. There's a blue mosque which looks terrific there. But the best part was arriving to see the white cliffs at Dover.
Oh,
Nearly home, nearly where we're getting to the, not home, but nearly yes. To where we're going to go.
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
My second question about the journey is, was there any time when you feared for your life? Was there any?
No. In fact, we had good. The bus broke down in Pakistan between Lahore, just after Lahore,
mm-hmm.
almost in the desert, but it was near a little Pakistan town. And then the Pakistanis discovered the Australians had a cricket bat on board.
It was on.
It was on. They could beat us. And they really love beating the Australians.
Of course, they still do.
And they offered us a dam to swim in because it was very hot. And only afterwards we realised it was their drinking supply. So we stopped.
Oh, of course. Mind you, it probably didn't stop them swimming in it, but...
Might not have, but we shouldn't have done that.
No, that was very kind of them, though.
It was... They were... Pakistanis were a lovely people.
Yes. Generally, I think you then, by the sound of it, you might agree with the statement that worldwide people in general are lovely. It's the politics that seems to twist them.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Best example of that is really the Germans... nice people, but we fought them tooth and nail in World War I and World War II. But it wasn't the people.
No.
It was political
systems.
System.
Yes.
I guess in the end the people elected, but the politicians got carried away and changed. In the 1930s, Hitler was terrific. He got everybody back to work. Later on, he became a tyrant and killed all the opposition without thought and became completely and totally... horrible. So people change.
Indeed. So, okay, back to England. You're going to have children, but they're going to be in Australia.
Yes.
So did you fly back or did you boat back?
We flew on Canadian Airlines. It was the quick cheapest way to get from London to Sydney. Was on CPA, Canadian Pacific Air.
Did you base yourself in Sydney or did you come back
down
to Melbourne?
No, I came straight home.
Right.
Caught the first ANZ flight home.
Okay, so to mum and dad or to where? Because you didn't have a home. You've been travelling.
Yeah, we rented a place.
You did.
And Christine was a Perth girl.
Right.
And when her parents saw what was happening, they moved to Melbourne.
Oh, okay.
And they made Melbourne an easy choice. We discussed where we'd live for quite some time, whether it be Perth or Melbourne.
I'm sure, yes.
And we rented a place and we bought one. In Bourne.
Okay, you're going to buy a house that's going to cost money. Where's the money coming from? What work line of work did you go back into?
Well, by that stage, I was a consultant in IT.
Okay.
And I could afford the payments. Mind you, Mr. Keating put the rates of interest up to 17%.
Yeah, that wasn't... That wasn't a nice period. Yes, it wasn't a nice
period. But we had a lovely house. It was suited us.
Right.
By today's standards, it... wouldn't count, but it did us well.
Yes.
And we had our family there. And then one day I had to leave. My wife wanted to divorce me.
People grow together and people grow apart, don't they? They do.
And she wanted me to leave. I couldn't leave because it was where my two kids, Catherine and Anthony, had come home to after being born. It was their house.
tough.
So I had to leave. I didn't have a choice.
Yes.
And I had to make it so that I could attract my kids to want to live with me. They were living with their mum in their own house. And I couldn't live without them.
Totally understandable.
So what we did, I went down to the Greensboro Cat Protection Society and bought them each a kitten. They wanted to come to my place.
It must have been another one of those difficult periods in your life, though.
Yes.
But you got through it.
Yeah, in fact, they were home. I had arranged with my wife, then wife, before she became my ex-wife, that I could have them for a week. Right. And she could have them for another week. My daughter used to throw tantrums. And she had thrown one the day I asked my wife whether I could have her for a week on and a week off. My wife said yes.
Because of the tantrum.
I laughed. I tried to laugh when my daughter threw a tantrum. It was hard sometimes. And I'd say to her, can't you do better than that? That was a terrible thing to say because she could do better than that.
Oh, dear. Yeah, sometimes don't open the door too wide.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
And so, I had arranged for them to be at home at my place the week of Father's Day. And when I had the stroke, I fell over and attracted my son and daughter by just banging on the wall with the foot I could move. And they came in and said, what are you doing? I was in the toilet. What are you doing on the floor, Dad? And I couldn't talk. Oh. But I found I could talk if I really yelled and enunciated my words as clearly as possible. So I was lying on the floor and basically said, looking up at the ceiling, ambulance! And my daughter called an ambulance. My son is by my side. And the ambulance came in and they said, you've had a stroke. I didn't know what had happened. No, I haven't.
That must have been the worst thing, is not knowing what's going on.
Well, my brain was half dead anyhow, and I wasn't thinking straight.
Okay.
I had to deal with what the situation I had. So the ambo said, yes, you haven't noticed, but we've taken off your shoe and sock and been stabbing your foot for the last half hour, and you haven't felt it at all. We see lots of people like you. So within half an hour of my stroke, I was in Box Hill Hospital, and that saved my life because they put blood thinners into me. I can still feel where they put the needle in my wrist and of my good side.
Mm.
And I then spent the next year in hospital and then recovery at Royal Talbot.
A stroke is a very debilitating event, isn't
it? I'll say, yes. It changes your life completely.
Was there a stage where you thought, my life is finished?
No, never. I had two marvellous kids. It was a problem how to deal with them. My son was at primary school.
Oh, gosh.
And I had to steer him in the right direction for work and a job and as a person. And I'd had a stroke. I was out to it.
Oh, dear.
And having been a project manager for a computer company, I knew that IT was the best career for kids. So I put a good quality computer with a good quality brand new internet connection, the internet was new then, into his bedroom. My wife didn't do that, the bedroom she had for him. So that was another reason why they like coming to my place. So my son taught himself social media. He was one of the very first people on Facebook. He was tweeting to everybody who had listened for years.
Did he end up going into IT?
Yes.
Tell us about your son, because I know you're very proud of
that.
It.
Yes. I'll do that if I may.
Oh, please.
I said to him when he finished at Bourne High, because we're in the Bourne High catchment area, he went to Bourne High, which is a terrific school. And I said to him at the end of that, you've got to do something when you finish. What are you going to do? He ummed and ahed, and I said, I don't mind if you're a tradie or what. If you're going to be a plumber, just be careful. You've got to be up to your armpits and other people's shit for a lot of your working life. But I do have a preference. I'd rather you went to university. He went to Swinburne and did a Bachelor of Business majoring in IT, which is a terrific
good
career.
Day.
Yes, it's a terrific course, but it means you can do anything you want in business. And so then when he finished that, he decided he wanted his first job in social media. And he was living with me at that stage. I wasn't charging him board and accommodation rent, so he wanted to stay in Melbourne where the living was cheap. But he had the problem. Where would you go for a job in social media in Melbourne? He had to work that out. And he was also, I should also say, he was a sporting person, unlike me, who was completely unball coordinated. I was very pleased to see he wasn't like that at all. He loved playing basketball. So we joined the Bulleen Boomers, Bulleen Templestowe Basketball Club. He played in the under eights. He couldn't throw the ball up to the hoop, but he could steal the ball from the other boys and the other team and throw the ball to one of the taller guys on the team who could throw it up. And he learned to play basketball that way. And he really loved basketball. With his first pay packet, he bought Foxtel so he could watch the NBA. He also, the package he bought also had adults only, but I didn't tell him that. He probably knew anyhow.
Next week, Simon talks about his son and his successes, as well as dealing with the effect of his stroke and how he has worked hard to regain as much normality in his life as possible. Next week, Simon Allsop on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network.